Thank you for standing by. This is the conference operator. Welcome to the Aurania Resources Limited quarterly update call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode, and the conference is being recorded. After the presentation, there'll be an opportunity to ask questions. To join the question queue, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. Should you need assistance during the conference call, you may signal an operator by pressing star and zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Keith Barron, Chairman and CEO, and Richard Spencer, President. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and welcome wherever you are in the world. I'll get right into this. So I'm just looking at the very first slide of the presentation. You can see a big red blob. That's our concession package of roughly 500,000 acres. That's 208,000 hectares, if you're metric. And we're down along the border. We're in Ecuador along the border with Peru. And you can see on the second image to the right, white line here, that's the border line. And the reason I wanted to show this is because there's a lot of activity immediately to the south of us in the Cordillera del Condor. Now, we're in the Cordillera del Cudacu, which is really just an extension of the whole thing geographically. But you've seen a lot of news recently from SolGold about Porvenir, which is right down in the far south, and a lot of news from Warintza, which is just about 15 kilometers to the south of our boundary. Warintza and Solaris has got some nice high grade from four different holes south of us. And there are now nine advanced projects to the south of us, predominantly copper. Of course, everyone's aware of Fruta del Norte, which is being mined by Lundin Gold. That's kind of in the center here. And that is a deposit that was found by my former company. But one of the reasons I wanted to show this is because there's a couple of names here that maybe you don't recognize, Jackpots and Gamora. And these are in the Lundin Newcrest joint venture. And these were things that were actually found by Aurelian Resources, my former company, when we had 96,000 hectares in this belt. And the reason I show this is because when you have a big package like we had, 96,000 hectares, that's when you maximize your chances of making discovery. Unfortunately, we don't hold on to these things anymore, these two discoveries, Jackpot and Gamora, but with all the discoveries that we've been making in this great red mass here, the 208,000 hectares, I am certainly not going to sell out at some point to one entity and let everything go in one package like it went formerly. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out to folks. This is really, really heating up as a belt. It's looking like the Chilean belt from El Indio through to Chuquicamata when things were really heating up about 50, 60 years ago. So this is really, really exciting for us. So next slide, please.
Okay, so guys, just focusing on our specific drill program, Richard here. We've started off the scout drilling program on the Fenkin 2 and on the Fenkin area in general. And I'll be talking through some of the early results in terms of what we've seen in the core there. And then the plan is, after we've finished the scout drilling in the Fenkin area, to go on to the Chiria-Shimpia area, which is a 15-kilometer-long trend of silver-dominated material, and then back onto a Huacha, which is really a porphyry. What we believe is a cluster of porphyries in the northern part of the concession area. So this so-called phase one drilling is the drilling that we are undertaking now. We started in mid-September, and this is funded thanks to the raise that we did that was led by Cantor with Hayward, 8 Capital, Ray J, and Echelon in the syndicate. So I'll just step through the initial sort of what we've observed in the core in the Sankin areas. So moving on to page 3, originally our concept was that, and this is an image of the magnetics in the Sankin area, so the big sort of bruised colored blobs are magnetic highs. The Sankin magnetic center, huge, 5 kilometers in diameter, and it was just a little bit too big for us to get our heads around as to start putting holes into that. So we selected Sankin N2, N3, N4 up in the top right of the graphic as more specific targets that would give us more sort of easier targets to put the initial drilling in, so we drilled Sankin N2 and N3, and I just wanted to talk through those results quickly, which puts us into a much better position as to how we handle that big blob at the bottom there, Sankin, and some of the other targets in the area. Sorry, in terms of that financing that we just did, I omitted Canaccord from the list there. Apologies, guys. And thanks very much for all your help in getting that done. So, you know, as we go on to page 4, we were expecting to hit porphyries, and as those red blobs on the geophysics, we didn't hit porphyry. We hit into a system that was very much dominated by iron oxide minerals, hematite and magnetite, and as well with the silicate minerals, we recognized that we were dealing with sodic and calcic sodic and potassic alteration, and all of those are pretty classic for iron oxide copper gold systems, and we started to realize that those red blobs that we were seeing on the geophysics, those magnetic areas were not due to the magnetic core of porphyries. They were more related to the iron minerals related with an iron oxide copper gold system. So our model changed. In our drilling of the first couple of holes up to hole 5 in Sankin N2 and N3, we've got a trajectory towards the center of the system. In other words, holes 4 and 5 are closer to the mineralized system than hole 3 was. And that sort of vector is given to us both by the iron minerals, the hematite and magnetite, as well as the silicate minerals that the typical sort of zonation is illustrated on the right-hand side of this graphic. So, just looking at what the rocks actually looked like on page 5, on the right-hand side, that's core from Sankin 2, with hole number 2, and the depth is about 143 meters down from surface. And the core is red, and that's because it's been absolutely flooded with hematite. And just as a comparison, those are a couple of photographs on the left-hand side from core from Ernest Henry in Australia, and an iron oxide copper gold deposit that is being mined at the moment. Pretty similar looking material. And then, you know, on page six, in terms of the actual copper mineralization that we're seeing, we're seeing native copper, and we're seeing more copper in hole five than we have in any of the others. So, you know, again, that's confirming our vector. And on page seven, you know, this just illustrates the alteration vector that we've got. So hole three is the furthest from the core of the system. Holes one and two slightly closer, four and five much closer. And on this graphic, it shows where we're drilling hole six at the moment, and that's at about 250 meters depth at the moment, and it'll probably run to about somewhere between 400 and 500 meters. That's what's planned. And you know, the key thing about the sink and scout drilling is that it clued us into these iron oxide copper gold systems. We're now seeing that the Senken 2 and 3 are actually part of the same body. That blue area between Senken N2 and N3 is a fault. And probably the blue area between Senken N3 and N4 is also a fault. So at the end of the day, you know, we're looking at all those blobs in the top right of this graphic, the blue and red blobs. Actually, those should all be sort of pushed together. If we were to restore the movement on those faults that are cutting the system, that whole area in the top right would merge together to be a big red-purple blob, very similar to the main sink and central magnetic feature. So we've got one system that in the sink and north area, and the alteration vector, as well as the copper that we're seeing in the core, is increasing towards the northeast along the line, more or less, of that arrow that's labeled alteration vector there. So that is one iron oxide copper gold system there. Obviously, we can see a little bit of copper mineralization in the core. The gold, obviously, we can't see. We're waiting for those results, and those results should be back for the gold assays imminently. What I just wanted to mention about the big blob in the lower part of that graphic is that the Senken N1 target is a breccia, and the left is just a photograph of the high-grade copper and silver that we're seeing in that breccia. And a breccia is just a broken-up rock. And what is significant about that is that breccias are very common in the core of iron oxide copper gold systems. Ernest Henry, Olympic Dam, most of these big iron oxide copper gold deposits have a lot of breccia in them. And the fact that we've got that mineralized breccia, it's mineralized with copper and silver, right on the edge of that big Senken central magnetic feature, it doesn't make sense that it's there if it were linked with that Senken North area, because the vector towards mineralization is actually moving away from where Senken 1 is. So we're starting to realize that Senken 1 area and the big magnetic blob at the bottom of that graphic is one separate system. And what we're seeing in the scalp drilling and the vector towards the northeast is a second iron oxide copper gold system. And, you know, this makes perfect sense. Iron oxide copper golds, wherever they are around the world, tend to be clustered in districts. So just going on to page eight, the model that
Richard, yep. Before you do that, if I could just make some comments on this. As Richard has been saying, the N2, N3, N4 up to the north, it's very similar to the big magnetic feature to the south. It's just been cut up by a bunch of faults And these things are low magnetism areas, and these are these blue things through here. But we have every belief now that this thing to the south is going to be another IOCG, even though we don't have any drill holes in it. And if it is, it is absolutely huge. It's going to take some drilling to figure it all out. Remember, these things do not outcrop. So we are learning as we go with these things. Remember, this is the first time IOCGs have been found in the country of Ecuador. So we are learning as we go here. But it's very, very exciting for us. And when we do the geophysics over these things, things like copper sulfides and native copper will show up in the geophysics. So this is a great time for us. Please go ahead, Richard.
thanks, Keith. And just shout at me. It's difficult for me while I'm talking to actually hear you. So shout Navi. The next step on slide 7 actually is that the mobile MT equipment for the Hennebon survey that's coming up is now in country. So we'll be starting that very shortly. And, you know, the exciting thing about the mobile MT is that the cores of these systems generally have sulfides in them that are conductive. The halo of the iron oxide minerals, the magnetite and hematite, is not particularly conductive, whereas the sulfidic core is. And, you know, the beauty of having done a little bit of scout drilling on these targets is, one, it tells us what we're dealing with, because the geophysical signature from a porphyry is going to be quite a lot different from an IOCG system. And, you know, the reality from geophysics is that there are always multiple targets that come out of it. And, you know, you're faced with this multitude of targets. The geophysicists can't really provide guidance or very confidently anyway on which the sort of highest priority targets are out of the geophysics. But given this background that we've got on the from the scout drilling and knowing the direction of that vector on that graphic on page 7, we know that if an area lights up in the mobile MT that's along trend of that arrow, that will be our priority worm drill target. You know, we would prioritize that rather than any other red conductive blob that appears on this map. And, you know, so we will be flying the Senken North IOCG system. We will also, in the same survey, be flying the big magnetic feature and that central magnetic feature in the south. And now that we know what we're looking for, we should be able to, using the other data that we've got, be able to prioritize those conductive areas that come out of the mobile MT. So we're pretty excited about the MT starting very, very shortly. Unfortunately, the helicopter isn't quite in the air yet, but it will be very, very shortly. So going onto page 8, you know, this is the kind of thing that we think that we are looking for at Senken North, and Senken, that's big central magnetic feature in the south of page 7, is probably going to be different. One thing that we know for certain on the IOCG systems around the world is that each one is different. Focusing in on the Senken North area, we are using the Candelaria IOCG system as a model, because, and this is a vertical cut through Candelaria that's being mined by Lundin Metals in northern Chile. And, you know, what is so striking about this model of Candelaria in comparison to that Senken North target area is that in the core, we are seeing that mineralization is related to faults that are coming up through the rocks in that area. And, you know, if you're looking at this vertical slice through Candelaria, it's the same thing. The fault is labeled in black, and the mineralization isn't directly along the fault, but it's very much centered on the fault. So you know that that fault at Candelaria fed the copper and gold-bearing fluids into that system. But and so we know that we're dealing with a fault-influenced system, like is the case in most iron oxide, copper, gold deposits around the world. The second fundamentally important thing about Candelaria is that the deposit sort of spreads out. It mushrooms out under that what we've labeled as andesite there, and is the green layer that is it's obviously affected by the fault. So it's lower on the right hand side of that graphic. That green layer is a volcanic, it's a lava that is impermeable. And so, you know, as the fluids were moving up the fault, they got into that impermeable layer to some extent, but most of the fluids and most of the deposit actually lies just under that volcanic layer. And this is an absolute dead ringer for what we've hit on the Senken drilling. We've got a volcanic and impermeable seal to the system that has alteration in it. But really, we're most excited about what we're seeing underneath that volcanic layer in sandstones that are much more permeable. So at Senken, we believe that our best sort of exploration guide is this picture of the Candelaria mine in northern Chile. Going on to page 9, once we've finished the scout drilling in Senken, we are going to move across onto Chile and Chimpia. The left-hand part of this graphic just shows the soil results, both for silver and antimony. Antimony is one of the key pathfinder elements for epithermal systems. And, you know, the other system that we are drawing an analogy with at Tiria Shimpia is Cerro de Pasco in northern Peru. Cerro de Pasco that's been mined since around about 1620 or so for silver. That is a system that has silver, well, obviously silver that's been mined, but it also has these epithermal pathfinder. And, you know, there's a little scale bar in the bottom of that graphic. Tiria Shimpia is a massive system. At the moment, it's about 15 kilometers long, but the guys who are in the field at, right now are reporting stuff from further north of this graphic, so it actually extends beyond the 15 kilometers. It is a massive system. We're seeing outcropping mineralization through the jungle floor. So, you know, this is a system that needs scout drilling. And, you know, we're obviously after the silver rich components of the deposit, or of the target, I should say. So, you know, just in wrapping up, we're right at the stage where we've done a lot of field work. There's exciting stuff coming in from the field at the moment, and those results are jostling up in the priority ranking for scout drilling. And, you know, having done most of the grunt work in the sort of basic exploration throughout this massive land package, we're now at the point where we're moving the drill rig from the one target to the next And, you know, we're going to have some failures along the line, things that we miss on, but we're absolutely focused on making multiple discoveries in this area. That's basically it from me. Keith, anything from your side?
Yes, well, as Richard has just said, we will be flying this mobile MT survey very, very soon. It should be starting, I think, within the next 5 days. And we want to get it completed before Christmas. Now, at this point, we don't know what it's going to show up, but obviously, if we show up some very, very strong conductors, we're going to have to rejig the order of what we're doing here, and certainly, you know, we may have to change the priorities. But in any case, this is, you know, this is certainly not exhausted. We've got many, many more targets than this to tackle. These are, they're high in priority, but I wouldn't say that they're going to be the best targets that we're ever going to find on the property. There is still stuff coming out of the stream sediment sampling all the time. And also remember, we're in COVID times, and the original stuff that we drilled at Crunchy Hill and Yowie, where we think we simply didn't go deep enough, it has been a bit of a challenge. We haven't been able to get back in there because it's along the National Road, and there are cases of COVID there. And we've decided to go to Senkin, and because Senkin is an area where we can control the access. It's a helicopter-supported thing. So that's really, in a nutshell, folks, what we're doing, and we very much welcome some questions from the floor, the virtual floor. Thank you.
And Keith, just to summarize, the next steps are complete the drilling at Senkin on the Senkin North ISCG system. Obviously waiting for assays from the gold side of that, and we can see a little bit of copper in the core increasing towards the north. The mobile MT survey, as Keith mentioned, should be starting imminently. That's an absolutely key component to our understanding of these systems, helping us to focus in on them. And then early in the new year, the drill rig will probably be moving to the Tiriashimpia area, the silver-dominated lead-zinc system. And, you know, as Keith also mentioned, there are some really exciting things coming from the field at the moment. So we might have to rejig some of the priorities, but, you know, exciting stuff ahead. So let's move over to the Q&A now.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. To join the question queue, you may press star, then 1 on your telephone keypad. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing any keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then 2. To join the question queue, please press star, then 1 now. Our first question comes from Mark Reichman of Noble Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation, and was just wondering how your discussions are going with potential JV partners, and Canon Metals announced a deal with Japan Oil Gas Metals, I think yesterday, and was wondering what you thought of it and what implications it might have for you going forward in Ecuador and Peru.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot, Mark, for the question. We do have people in the data room right now. Obviously, we're not at liberty to discuss who they are. You know, with this this new discovery at Porvenir, and with the drilling that's gone on at Lorenza, and you know. So Solaris has come out of nowhere, and they now have a market cap of over $500 million. I'm hoping that we're going to get there rapidly, but we shall see. It's put the real focus on this area. So, you know, I think that everybody's watching us very, very closely. Now, regarding the deal that Hannon has just made with JobMech, I think it's an exciting deal for them, considering that they haven't put any drill holes down. I think for us, we would want a better deal for our shareholders, and we would like to do at least a fair bit of work over the property before having any sort of a joint venture or that kind of a deal. But certainly, you know, this is all great stuff. Barrick has encircled one of our land packages in Peru, in the northern parts. We've applied for 400,000 hectares. That's 1 million acres. And we have every expectation that it's going to be as full of minerals as this first package in Ecuador is proving to be. So it's getting to the situation where we just have so many targets. We have a lot of optionality here because now we have five different styles of mineralization. The IOCG makes five. And so we've got something for everybody here. And, you know, this the lead, zinc, silver, hopefully there's going to be gold somewhere in the system too. Maybe that would attract someone like, I don't know, Buenaventura or Hochschild or one of the silver producers. And maybe they wouldn't have a taste for copper porphyry or IOCG. So anyway, I think we're in the driver's seat here, very much. Thank you,
Mark. If I can just add there, I'm seriously excited for Hannon having a company of the caliber of JobMech coming in. I mean, they've got an incredible track record of discoveries. One of the best explorers out there. You know, we're just delighted to see that they are taking the sedimentary copper side of our story, and obviously Hannon's story, as seriously as we are. I mean, you know, we saw the potential, and that's why we applied for that 1 million acres in northern Peru. And I think the deal that Hannon made with JobMech just bodes really, really well for the future for that component of our portfolio. So we're really excited that they've done that deal.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Terence Ortslan of TSO. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for the presentation. Keith, I think the way you started was El Indio Belt all the way to Chuquicamata and onwards. Are we saying that there's a Cretaceous Iron Belt style mineralization over there with respect to the oceanic plate and superplumes and shear zones and everything else? Is that kind of similar to that? Maybe I missed the beginning of your abstract of the explanation.
Well, as Richard has said, you know, all these IOCGs are different. Now, what we're finding here, this is a back arc rift system, which was active during the Jurassic and maybe even up into the Cretaceous. But what we are finding are alkaline volcanics, and they're toward the ultramafic end of the alkaline suites, which means that they've come from very, very deep down. Really at the base of the crust, and so this structure that we've got almost in its entirety, and which continues down to the south, is a major crustal suture. It would have flopped back and forth from alkaline volcanics, and then to conventional porphyry copper style stuff. The same thing is seen down in Peru. There's an alkaline suite on the extension of this belt down into there. So it's a little bit different. It's certainly different from the Candelaria stuff, but you know, that's what we believe the explanation is here.
And Terence, just to add to that, you know, around Candelaria, you go from porphyry to IOCG to porphyry in about 10 million years within the same belt, and we think that we're dealing with the same thing. You know, Keith was just alluding to the ready alkaline rocks that we've got at Senken. I mean, these things have got all of the xenocrysts in them, come straight up from huge depth. And right over the top of them, we've got ignimbrites. So completely different style of volcanism, more associated with sort of porphyry style. So, you know, all that we can tell at this stage, we don't understand the tectonics all that well in detail, but all we know is that in about 10 meters of core in a conformable system, all hell breaks loose tectonically. And, you know, I think most of the big belts of deposits around the world, starting in the Archean and going up to, you know, sort of yesterday, are in these belts where there are massive tectonic changes going on. And, you know, we're certainly seeing that in the Senken area. And, yeah, so really exciting from that sort of side as well.
Amazing. Thank you. You're really up to date on this one. Thank you.
Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one. There are currently no questions in the queue. This concludes the question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Spencer for any closing remarks.
Everyone, thanks for your time on this update call. You know, it's an exciting time for us because this is, you know, exploration obviously involves a huge amount of grunt work, and, you know, our geologists doing an amazing job in tough physical conditions in the field. And, you know, thanks to their work over the last 3.5 years, supported by the early geophysics that we did, flying the whole area with magnetics and radiometrics, we're now at the point where, as you mentioned, there's a whole lineup of targets, and this is the exciting part where we get to test those targets, and this is where there's the opportunity for discovery, and I use the word plural there, because in a plural sense, because if you take our land package, that 500,000 acres, and you superimpose it over any of the areas to the south of us along this geological trend, you would end up with one of the major gold deposits in Ecuador and, you know, a handful of porphyry coppers. And then, you know, we've got the sedimentary copper silver and the iron oxide copper gold systems coming in. So we're absolutely focused on multiple discoveries. And, you know, this is the time that it's going to happen when we have the drill bit turning. And I don't know whether that discovery is going to be tomorrow or the next day or whenever, but, you know, the drill bit turning is the crucial thing to get those discoveries. And we're about to get a little bit of a leg up the flying of the mobile MT survey. So please stay tuned. Exciting times ahead. And thank you very much for your support. Thank you very much to the syndicate that helped out in that last financing, led by Cantor, Canaccord, Haywood, 8 Capital, Ray J, Exelon, Echelon, I should say. And, you know, really good to see the institutions starting to pay more attention to the story as we get closer to the time when a discovery should be made. And to our loyal shareholders from day one who have been in the story from day one, thank you for your support, and we look forward to making a discovery in the short term. Yeah. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating and have a pleasant day.